I'm John Kroll. April is National Poetry Month. Today on No Limits, in this special pre-recorded program, we will commune with some Indiana poets to mark the occasion. We'll hear them read from their work and discuss how they create it. My guests are Hoosier poets Calista Buchan, Kyle D. Craig, Chris Forehand, Rachel Sahadachny, and Natalie Solmer. Because this is a recorded show, we won't be able to take calls, emails, or messages via social media. But we do hope you enjoy this exploration and celebration of poetry as we summon the bards for the next hour. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. April is National Poetry Month, and we're going to celebrate the month and celebrate poetry today by talking to some of Indiana's poets. This is a recorded program, so we won't be able to take calls, emails, or messages via social media, but we hope you will enjoy the conversation. My guests are Hoosier poets Calista Buchan, Kyle D. Craig, Chris Forehand, Rachel Sahadachny, and Natalie Solmer. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. I want to, what we're going to be doing during this hour is really trying to summon the muse and talk a bit about the creative process, take people inside poetry. So I want to start, and where I want to have everyone read some of their work, because poetry is a spoken form. It has to be heard to be fully appreciated, at least I think. But also talk about the why of being a poet, what it was about the form that spoke to you that perhaps other forms do not. Calista, I'm going to start with you.
Wonderful. Thank you. For me, I think poetry provides a space to talk about what we can't otherwise talk about, that the poem invites us to talk about things that might otherwise make us uncomfortable or uneasy, and by providing us with a form and a song to celebrate those things that make us uncomfortable, we can get a little bit closer to what it means to be human and what it means to use art to make that, to consider what it means to be human.
Kyle, why are you a poet?
excuse me. I think like a lot of people, I started out as a reader and started enjoying reading poetry and then started trying my hand at writing it. And ultimately, I think I work professionally as a mental health counselor, and I find a lot of parallels between my work as a therapist and the process of writing poetry, mostly along the lines of they're interesting vehicles for playing with the concept of self, like how we make sense of who we are, how we make sense of our relationships with others and our relationship to the world. I think a famous poet once said, the purpose of poetry is to remind us just how difficult it is to remain one person. And I feel like poetry for me is this way I get to play with various aspects of myself and others and kind of the multiplicity of that.
I probably should let everyone else talk, but when I hear an answer, I'm horrible. I like to follow up on this. What aspects of poetry, what parts of your personality does poetry liberate that otherwise would be subliminated?
I find my poetry often, I write a lot of different kinds of poems, but often I find some of my poems have humor, and some of my poems talk about grief or longing and suffering. And I think, like, once I'm done writing, I kind of realize, like, oh, wow, this is a pretty good reflection of various parts of me that kind of likes to crack jokes and do these kinds of things, but at the same time, has experienced a certain amount of suffering like anyone else. And I like to tap into that and hope other readers will tap into that as well.
Chris, why are you a poet?
One way to think about it is I can't play the saxophone as well as Lester Young. I can't sing like Frank Sinatra or even Nancy Sinatra. I don't which means that I find the music of poetry absolutely essential because, and this is hard to figure out, I've been puzzling over this for decades, but you know, poetry is language, words have meaning, but the way words exist in poetry is with rhythm, and with the sounds of the vowels and the consonants are important. So poetry gets me to the same place that music does, which is paradoxically a kind of wordless place. You know, it's been said that poetry says what can't be said. Poetry uses words to do things words can't do. So for me, poetry has always been absolutely essential to my life because it reminds me of my life. So much of daily living is about, you know, distraction by the superficial. And poetry is a place I can go to either in reading it or in writing it to slow down and listen to my interior world and to get in touch with the rhythms of being. So it's a kind of way to refresh myself. And in the same way that I refresh myself driving in the car to work by listening to music, I'm reminded of what's essential and what is beautiful. And then I'm ready to go out into the world and be abused by it.
Rachel.
I find poetry to be an exploration, and I think that it offers so many different ways to see the world. You can take one direction and just ask yourself a question and answer it from over here. You can decide to ask the opposite question, and that's endless ways of getting in touch with what makes you connected to what's around you, or what connects you to your past, or to the different relationships that you have had, or dreams that you've had. Like, it, you open yourself up to allow those various areas to find a way to combine, and then you create something that you didn't even realize was inside of you. And so it's a part of the world also. And that, I think, you know, is endlessly entertaining, right? You know? And just, I think such an important part of poetry is just being open to play and allowing that to happen, just spontaneity, and being patient with it, too.
Natalie.
I think Chris said something about, you know, poetry is trying to say what you can't say or what you can't put into words, and I definitely see it that way. I see it as I'm trying to translate. It's like a translation of, you know, my inner world. And we all have our inner worlds. Like, we live in the outer world and we have our jobs and we go to work and we do what we have to do and we pay our bills. But what's going on inside each person, no one knows except for that person. And poetry is like trying to create this, recreate, you know, your experience, maybe to give the reader that experience. But words are ineffectual. You know, narrative or prose, like you're saying, why do you write poetry? I feel like it's harder using narrative or prose, because with poetry, there's so many other effects you can do, as we're talking about with music and rhythm, to put you in this sort of transcendental state. You know, if you read a poem that, you know, takes off the top of your head, like Emily Dickinson said, and why I write. I mean, I guess if I didn't write, you know, I'd at least be a reader, but I write because of the fact that, you know, when I'm writing, it does put me in that transcendental kind of state. If I'm lucky, you know, I'll get the little writer's buzz, and, you know, you want to come back again. And it, when you're writing, it takes you someplace unexpected, you know, that you didn't know you could go.
Well, I think we've whetted the appetite enough here. It's probably time to dine. Natalie, I'm gonna stay with you. Is there a poem that you would care to share with us? And
sure.
Do you want to set it up, or do you want to let it speak for itself?
Well, there's a lot, kind of a lot going on here, but I'll say I was doing some research about Slavic mythology. My grandparents, my heritage is they're all from Eastern Europe, and so I ended up, some of it started slipping in here. There's something about Kupala Night, which happens to be my birthday. It's June 24th. I didn't know this, but June 24th happens to be St. John the Baptist feast day. and my birthday, and they say that, you know, when they converted the pagans to Christianity, you know, they were, so that was this pagan festival, Cupola Night, and then, you know, they kind of transferred St. John the Baptist Day on there. So that makes an appearance in here. But other than that, I, you know, hopefully, you know, you can kind of follow along with this. It's called Place the Lightning Bolt in Your Hair. I know you have been eating bitter apple blossoms for 20 years and are tired. Each time the love of your life comes and goes with a season, you begin to think of death. I say now, pluck the lightning bolt from your cloud and use it to pin up your hair. The braids you braid now in anger, for too long you have seen the blot of your father's suicide around you. You say under all anger is hurt, and your heart is just an orchid covered in snow. But I say you will die this way. I say stop crying in the garden and gather flowers in anger. Set them on your altar in anger. Light the candle and watch it melt. Remember your people once worshipped rocks and trees. Remember how you craved the woodland while the baby inside you sucked down every bit of magic like nectar and stretched your belly. You left campus, poverty at your heels. Your family not speaking to you, woman who followed the smell of trees. You were led to the green goddess of underworld. She stood bare-breasted in flower beds. You ran from what tried to kill you. You must continue to run, your gray fleece open and flapping to take flight from the street. Don't worry if your birthday falls on old Cupola night. Throw your wreath into the river. Ask the black stork to steal your crown from the men. It might be best if you never marry. You already know the secret. Ferns don't bloom.
That was poet Natalie Solmer reading one of her poems in this special recorded No Limits, where we're celebrating poetry for National Poetry Month. Natalie, how did that poem start? I mean, not literally, but mm-hmm. What place did it come from?
I usually will have a line nagging at me, like coming into my head a lot. And I had certain lines coming into my head talking about, you know, and then I just go from there. I, you know, start from that line and it just comes. But it came from, you know, a place of feeling down and like trying to tell myself things to, you know, get me up.
Is that the way it is for the rest of you? I mean, does it start with a line or does it start with a feeling? Rachel, what is the starting point for you generally?
I kind of stumble across the starting point a lot. I do a lot of journaling and writing and wordplay, like even just I like to have a lot of music in my poems, so maybe I'll start with just like literally vomiting words that rhyme together, like just not making sense. And then you look for one that kind of grabs your attention and takes a hold of you and start investigating it and exploring it and just trying to, you know, keep spinning this thread and not, you know, trying to hold on and not let it go and still leave it open to the opportunity of other ideas coming in also.
Chris, you look like you're leaning into the microphone.
It always starts for me, and I think this is the case with a lot of poets, not with an idea for what the poem is going to be about. And not even with a feeling. For me, it starts with language. You know, some little bit of language comes to me or I steal it off of a sign on the side of the road or something. It's just interesting to me. And then and I have a notebook that I fill with phrases and words that just seem interesting to me, even if I don't know why or what might become of them. And typically, I find two things that seem to belong together for some reason. You know, two phrases, two words. I put them together, and if I'm lucky, they draw sparks, and something happens, and then I'm off. It is an act of discovery. I'm off in search of what this poem wants to be about.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about poetry. April is National Poetry Month, and we are celebrating that. today on No Limits in this special pre-recorded show. Because it is pre-recorded, we are not able to take calls or emails or messages via social media. We hope, though, that you are enjoying the discussion and the reading of great poetry. My guests are Calista Buchan, Kyle D. Craig, Chris Forehand, Rachel Sahadachny, and Natalie Solmer. All of them are Hoosier poets. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. April is National Poetry Month, and we're celebrating poetry today on No Limits by talking with a group of Hoosier poets about their art and how it speaks to them and how it speaks to others. This is a recorded program, so we're not able to take calls, emails, or messages via social media, but we hope you're enjoying the reading of this poetry and the discussion. In the last segment, we heard from Natalie, one of her poems, and I should say the poets are Calista Buchan, Kyle D. Craig, Chris Forehand, Rachel Sahadachny, and Natalie Solmer. We heard from Natalie in the last segment. I'm going to ask Kyle to read something now. What's the poem, and do you want to set it up, or do you want to?
Sure. I write free verse poems, but I also write a lot of Japanese forms poems. I'm going to start with a short prose poem and then very briefly read a haiku sequence. This poem, the prose poem, is called How to Write Haiku. Know the difference between the sound of rain hitting a window and the sound of rain dripping from a window awning. Familiarize yourself with the cries of cicadas and the complex lives of tree frogs. Length and width are not what count. Ladybugs, crickets, and butterflies should suffice. Make the wind a friend. Let it whisper to you about its love of autumn, the silly games it plays with leaves, or how it likes to race along the bends of dry riverbeds. Study shadows of spring or snowflakes falling upon fence posts in winter. Cherry blossoms are a safe bet, as is morning birdsong or white egrets. And speaking of birds and their words, they should warble, trill, or croon. Scents emanating from kitchens should waft. Pick foods like persimmons, lentils, and butternut squash. When it comes to objects, candles make a nice choice. And if you don't develop a close relationship with the moon, it may be better to not even begin at all. And then I, just to give you some haiku, since I read a poem, How to Write Haiku, this is a haiku sequence called Fractured Sunlight. Family piano, each key out of tune. Autumn wind, the neighbor's daughter using again. Gun violence, the way ink spreads on rice paper. Abandoned home, the holes in their story. Fractured sunlight, all I discover inside her diary.
That was Indiana poet Kyle D. Craig reading some of his work. Kyle, in hearing that, and particularly in hearing the prose poem and the setup, I want to ask what drew you to haiku, and then perhaps broaden the conversation so that we're talking about, you know, when we talk about poetry, it's impossible to talk about it really as a monolith. I mean, there are almost as many different forms of poetry as there are snowflakes, to use one of your images. So we probably ought to talk a little bit about what draws you to particular forms, why you find it, you know, more natural to express yourself in that way. So I'm going to start with you. What was it that drew you to haiku?
I think, you know, the notion of haiku, and I guess all poetry is, when I first encountered haiku, I don't think I fully appreciated it. And so it was kind of a deepening appreciation that got me kind of more into haiku. I read a haiku that basically, the haiku was, "Nighttime in the hospice aquarium, the pulse of fish gills." And all of a sudden I had this kind of aha moment of like, wow, this is, nighttime makes me think of this vast sky, and then I'm being brought into a hospice room, and then I'm being brought into a fish aquarium, and I'm seeing these fish gills breathe, and I'm thinking of people breathing their last breath, and all of a sudden I realize this very compressed short form could kind of encapsulate all these connections that my mind starts making that aren't even on the page. And so that's kind of what got me fascinated about haiku.
Rachel.
Well, that makes me think about something just in terms of reading poetry. Why do we love it so much? And I feel like it's because when you read a poem, you're having an experience, like a real actual physical experience. Like, and so when Natalie reads a poem to herself or Chris reads a poem to himself, it's different than when I'm reading the poem to myself, which is why it's fun to discuss poetry too, right? Like what mm-hmm. stands out to each person? Maybe Chris is noticing that there's some kind of meter or syllable count that's like really creating this ultimate tension. And Natalie's noticing the fables in it. And I'm noticing like this weird emotional undercurrent, you know? And it really, so it has the power of creating an individual experience, even though it's being read by a group, which is amazing.
Callista, what forms speak to you or don't speak to you?
Well, I think as a reader, I'm always fascinated by the form of a poem and how that form complements its content, how that form speaks to the themes that a poem is after. And so I'm always looking for that relationship between the shape of a poem and then the shape of the idea and how those things are related. As a writer, most recently, I've been most deeply invested in the prose poem form. And what I love about the prose poem is its in-betweenness, that it gives us the space to borrow the tools of a lot of different kinds of writing and to use those tools toward poetic ends. And I have found that in the content that I'm most interested in, that sense of in-betweenness really speaks to the ideas that I'm concerned with.
I'm going to ask you, if you would, to share some of your poetry right
now. Sure, thank you. So I'll read a poem that is from a chapbook called Double Mouthed. And it's part of a larger project of poems about motherhood and identity, and about how parenthood, for me, was really shocking and maybe traumatizing.
For a lot of us.
Yeah, right? It's this really big deal experience. We are all, if not all parents, we're all the children of parents. And so it's this universal experience that maybe we don't talk about how weird it is enough. And so I have found the poem to be a really a safe space to sort of unpack that discomfort that I have about that. This particular poem is called Regeneration. Woman, be permeable, be ocean, be habitat. Instead of woman, say starfish. Find a tide pool. New limbs in place of those you've lost, as if misplaced, as if not dead, as if not plucked from your body, as if not woman. Crawl away with what remains. Sink, scale, absorb each place. Woman, cover your arms in starfish. Wear them across your chest, latched into your hair. Be invisible. Be sea. Let the salt crack across your skin. Cradle the water, what flows in and back. Watch for reflexes. There will be enough love, enough everything, they say in support group. There will be enough. But woman, woman, keep track of your arms.
That was the poet Callista Buchan reading one of her poems. Where did that poem start? I mean, where did the inspiration, I don't even want to use the word idea because I get the fact that often it is something much more elemental than even an intellectual process.
Well, I think that for me, all poems begin with a need, maybe before anything else, that there's something pulling at me that I can't let go of. I thought for a long time that I couldn't write about motherhood, that you're not supposed to, that it's not poetic enough, right? That it's too like chiclet or something. But the poet Alice Notley writes that when it comes to motherhood, it consumes you for a while. And if I didn't write about it, I wouldn't have anything to write about. It was my life. It was my experience for this period of this really intense time when my children were infants. And so it came out of this need to write and this need to communicate this experience. But also, and sort of a combination of things that were going on in my life at the time, breastfeeding support group, which is a really like big adventure. And as well as thinking about having a child as a kind of loss. My grandfather lost a leg in World War II, and I was always really troubled by that. Like, what does it mean to lose a limb? And what does that feel like? And I think the closest that I came was when I gave birth, that there was a thing that had been in and of my body that wasn't anymore. And how was I going to make sense of that experience? And the poem became the space where I could do that.
The poems we've heard so far actually have been about, if not fairly intimate experiences, about pretty intimate observations. Is it difficult to bear that much of yourself? Natalie's nodding her head and saying, yeah, yeah, silence does not work well in radio. So,
You know, something that you hear a lot, in order to write well, you have to take a risk. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, when I graduated the MFA at Butler, you know, my thesis was, I feel like, you know, I had kind of learned how to polish a poem and craft and stuff like that. But taking a risk is something else. And yes, I think a lot of times, you know, we all have our obsessions and what's going on inside of our heads and our lives. And that comes out in our writing. But sometimes it's very scary to go there. Mm-hmm. And it will take you, you know, the poem may take an organic form, you know, it will take its shape when you go to that place. But yeah, it's a risk, and it does feel kind of scary.
You know, for me, I don't think I'm ever scared to go to some emotional place in myself. I'm excited to go there. Mm-hmm. What's hard is getting there, because mm-hmm. one of the things, the more you write, I suspect this is true of all art, the more you do something and the better at it you get, as Natalie's saying, you know, so you learn how to polish the thing. Sometimes the harder it can be to find a way to surprise yourself with yourself, mm-hmm. and to use your understanding of craft, not to just make a well-made poem, mm-hmm. but to actually discover something authentic, mm-hmm. and use that craft as a means of expressing that thing.
Does it get easier or harder over time? Which is the other part of that, because there is. You know, there can be a certain boldness and ignorance, yeah. you know, in saying, I'm going to put it all out there understand what the consequences are.
It gets harder because you know more. Yeah. But in a way, it gets easier. I think I'm writing better now than I was when I was 19. But when I was 19, I thought, hey, this stuff's pretty good, just because I was ignorant. Right. So I was kind of, you know, just riding on ignorance and having a great time and not realizing how limited my skill was.
Rachel, does it get easier or harder the more you write?
I actually just had this conversation like 2 weeks ago. As my mom's a visual artist, and I was talking about poetry and trying to relate to her because she was feeling like it always comes from an inspiring place. And I was like, no, that's like when you first start writing poetry. Like, you're like inspired all the time. You're like, I have this great poem. But eventually that's just not enough. You really have to work at it. I mean, it is a professional type of job. You go to your notebook, your computer, and you make yourself sit there. And it gets harder, too, because you also perhaps are me. You know, I have to let go of a lot of expectations when I sit down there with my notebook or my computer. I can't be, you know, comparing what I'm writing right now to what I wrote last week. Or, you know, you have to be fresh every time, always look with new eyes. And that gets hard, too, because, you know, the more you write, perhaps you go, oh, I wish this was coming easier. I wish it was more like that poem. Or the more you read, you're like, I wish it was more like that poem. So that part, you know, that interior struggle you learn to overcome it. You get tricks for yourself. But that, I think, is part of what makes it harder, too.
What are some of the tricks?
I like to play a lot of word games, like I was talking about, just like writing, mm-hmm. not writing to make sense, just writing for sound or writing for image. like Chris was talking about, writing words that grab your attention. Whenever I'm reading, I keep a piece of paper, and I just, if a word speaks to me, I write that word down. And so later on, if I want to write something, I can just look at this list of words or look at this list of sounds or images that I've got and just kind of start playing with them. And that is my main trick, I would say, just to escape.
Does the poem have to be spoken for it to come alive for you? I mean, is that part of the process for each of you? I remember there was a guy years ago that I worked with in the newspaper, drove everyone in the newsroom crazy, by the way. But he was a magnificent stylist, and he had to talk through every one of his pieces. So absolutely no one wanted the desk next to his for his writing. But is it that way, Kyle, for you? Do you have to hear it before it begins to take life?
For me, it does. The speaking part of it is very important. I've been doing readings lately, and I memorize about 80 to 90% of my reading and don't use my book. And I realize that people have come up to me afterwards and said, I wouldn't have got this from just what I saw on the page. I heard it differently by the way that you spoke the poem. So for me, that's a really important piece, is to kind of hear poetry and originally it was an oral art, so.
Natalie, I saw you nodding your head pretty.
It could be kind of, I was thinking of an analogy in my head of like, you know, you're listening to a recording of a music group or whatever, and then you go to see them live. And perhaps, you know, it's like that hearing something read, you could get something different from it. But I like to think that the poem definitely has a life on the page as well, like even without being read aloud. It doesn't have to, but definitely I try to read out loud when I'm revising and stuff. It helps tremendously. And I have, you know, a little group that I meet with, and we read out loud to each other and critique, and that helps a lot.
Do your poems ever surprise you when you hear something that you didn't realize you were communicating when you were writing it down, but steps out? Yeah, Kyle.
I just want to speak to this one just because one of my favorite poets, Stephen Dunn, says, "I'm not into my poem until the first time I surprise myself." And I think that's something we're talking about. Does it get harder? Does it get easier? That's something I look towards as I start a poem and I'm writing. I kind of look for that moment that, oh, I didn't expect this to come out. And then I kind of build around that moment. So I not only have experienced that, but I look for that when I'm writing poetry, that something, you know, Yusef Komunyak, a famous poet, was at Butler recently and said, if I didn't discover things when I write, I wouldn't be writing. So
you have to hear it then for it to surprise you, and that's the moment that becomes alive for you?
That's definitely true for me, yeah.
Is that the case for others? I know we're getting close on time, but do your poems surprise you when you hear them aloud for the first time?
I think so. I think that means that in the composing process that I've gotten to this really amazing place of what jazz musicians call flow, where the discipline and the craft is paying off, and then you get to that moment where it all makes sense.
We are talking with some Hoosier poets about their art, about what it means to them, about how they achieve that art in celebration of National Poetry Month. This is a recorded program, so we're not able to take phone calls, emails, or messages from social media, but we hope you're enjoying hearing the poems and hearing the poets talk about their art. My guests are Calista Buchan, Kyle D. Craig, Chris Forehand, Rachel Sahadachny, and Natalie Solmer. Again, this is a recorded program. We're not taking calls, emails, or social media messages. We hope you enjoy hearing the poetry. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Thank you. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. April is National Poetry Month. We're marking the occasion by listening to and discussing poetry with five Hoosier poets. They are Callista Buchan, Kyle D. Craig, Chris Foran, Rachel Sahadachny, and Natalie Solmer. This is a recorded program, which means that we're not able to take questions via phone, email, or social media, but we hope you enjoy the discussion of poetry and the celebration of National Poetry Month. We've heard from three of our poets so far. I'm going to ask Rachel to read some of her work now. Do you want to set up the poem, or do you want to?
Yeah, I can say this poem, I think, is written with some of what I've been saying I like to do, like taking a little bit of like a phrase or some word, playing with language, with words, but also trying to reach like that vulnerable space. Like how do you trick yourself into get there? How do you find a surprise? And how do you allow yourself to go into a deep place where maybe you admit things that otherwise you would never know? This is called Make. Mother, may I make a clover chain. May I braid my hair and sleep on it. May I count the waves. May I wade your linseed oil streams. May I breathe. You kept turning off the light, saying the light was bad. There's something wrong with the light. A little mineral spirit bore into your head. I'll wipe everything clean, it said. I'll wipe everything. We walked next to ruins in a park. You caught a toad, stuck it in my hand. Hold it flat. I didn't want to touch its clammy skin. You clutched my wrist. Only the wild seed grows. Close your mouth to the water. Close your ears, daughter. Mother, may I play upside down? May I scrub your frown? May I unbutton me, unbutton you? May I swallow your stew? Mother, may I whirl beneath your full moon gaze? May I cut you out of my face?
That was Rachel Sahadachny reading one of her poems. I can tell it has an effect on you even as you read it.
Yeah.
It takes you to a place. Where did that poem begin?
I think with trying to approach childhood or what makes us or events that, you know, we recall and why do that have emotional resonance, and just the desire to kind of own your own story, tell your own story. But it's difficult, you know, to do that sometimes. And, you know, you don't want to talk about yourself too much. So poetry gives a way of creating something out of that experience to make it alive in a different way. So it's more not necessarily even your own anymore. Like it's just, it becomes its own story too. So that one, I felt like using the childhood game, like Mother May I, was a good place to jump off with trying to decipher the childhood narratives that were difficult, you know?
Are there some, because obviously this is about a mother-daughter relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to ask the question, the autobiographical question, because I think that's kind of trite. But instead, I'd like to reframe it and ask everyone. I mean, are there subjects, you know, Callista wrote about being a mother. Natalie wrote about extreme vulnerability. Are there subjects or places that are just too tender for you to go to? Or is that the goal, to try to get there? Natalie?
Sometimes it may take time. Like perhaps there's an experience or something that you know, that is always in your mind, that is an obsession for you, and that you feel like one day you want to get to, but it may take time, you know, and maybe it's just, it comes at the right moment.
Yeah, and I think it's different than composing an experience that you've had for a diary entry. When you compose it as a poem, it's meant to communicate more than just sort of self-expression, that it's meant to create some other kind of connection or some kind of universal experience. So you have to be able to talk about that experience, but also get beyond it and go someplace new.
And
the personal experience, too, when it is transformed in the poem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's something different in a poem.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the original experience. It has now been mythologized mm-hmm. in some way or shaped, not to change it, but to give it a kind of to find the meaning in it. Which is to say, maybe I just don't have deep, tender parts with me to worry about. I don't know. But I always want to go as far into myself as possible. And we talked about surprise.
Yeah.
That's the surprise. It's like, yeah. Oh, my goodness, I didn't realize I felt that. Or I remember that now. And for some reason, I buried it. There's something that happened to me about 15 years ago in my poetry. My father died, and I've written about this and spoken about it quite a bit. But my father died when I was a teenager, and many decades had passed. And I started writing these poems using fragments, different kind of syntax without a lot of conjunctions. And that strangely led to me writing about my feelings about my father, which I thought I'd kind of gotten over, but they were deep down in there. And writing these poems brought those feelings back up for me. And it was a little unsettling, mainly to realize those feelings were in there and I buried them. But it was really invigorating.
Is writing poetry always therapeutic? Or are there times that it's not, that you actually put yourself at risk by doing it? And once again, we've got one of those moments where everybody's really not coming back. Rachel.
I'll talk to that. I would not say that poetry is therapeutic. I feel like it's definitely you're exposing yourself and you're peeling off those pieces of skin and you're stirring things up. And I mean, definitely I've said to my partner, Matt, a lot, I'm like, my brain is exploding. Like, I feel like I'm just shaking with energy because I'm working on a piece and it's not settling me down. It's like revving me up kind of. And when you go into a really deep emotional place in a poem, and you may not necessarily mean to take yourself there to that place, but you're just using language and sounds that create that essence for you, it can really kind of disturb you for a little bit. But not every poem is like that. You know, it's just certain poems, I think, that really get you disturbed, but then you maybe those become your favorites, or you keep working on them, or maybe you can't keep them at all because they're so enmeshed that there's really several poems in there.
I want to get to Chris, have Chris read something for us too, but real quickly, I mean, is writing poetry a pleasurable activity for I ask this because it's sort of a cliche among writers that they always say, I always enjoy having written, but but the process itself, there are all sorts of lines about slicing open a vein and bleeding onto the page and all of that are cliches. Kyle?
I think it's the process for me is ultimately rewarding. But like people have been speaking about, I mean, that doesn't mean that deep emotions and disturbing things don't come up. And I mean, I could say a similar thing about, being a mental health counselor. How do we define therapeutic? Because as a therapist, I might be working with someone and thinking, wow, they're doing some really good work today. And for them, it was really hard and really difficult, and nothing felt pleasurable or good about that at all. But ultimately, in both ends, writing a poem or doing that, I think people come out thinking, I've kind of worked through some things, and hopefully, they come out feeling that they've, integrated some things that were previously fragmented, or at least acknowledged the fragments. So,
Chris, could we persuade you to read?
Yeah, and I'll speak to the pleasure question. I find writing poetry very pleasurable. I mean, sometimes it's agonizing because it's not working.
Yeah.
But that's part of the pleasure too. We don't make money from poetry. That's not why we do it. So why do we do it? We must take pleasure in it at some point of the process. And yeah, maybe the most pleasurable moment is that moment just after you think you've finished a poem and you're in the glow of the victory, and then 10 minutes later you realize, no, you didn't finish it and you still have to work on it. Poetry is an act of discovery. And for me, it's an act of returning to the essential matter of being alive, which I spoke to earlier. W.H. Auden, the poet, said that no matter what a poem is about, and poems can be about a lot of different things, always a poem underneath everything is about the experience of awe. of wonder, just the absolute strangeness, the exhilarating strangeness of this existence being here at all and us being in it. And I never want to forget that. And really, that is the thing that poems do for me, is it returns me to that sense of wonder. So I'll read a poem that I think is about that. And certainly, there are other ways we can experience wonder, organized religion, for instance. That's never worked for me. I like to do it on my own. And so this is a poem, as I think about it now, that is about how the ordinary, very ordinary details of a life can resonate with meaning, especially after the fact, as they stay with you. And so this is called Accidental Altar, and it's looking back on childhood. Some of these things made up, some of them not. Accidental Altar. Don't look for the Incas in my fifth grade history book. Forgotten on a garden rock and rained on, spine gone soft, pages stuck and puckering, shutting for good in the dark the feathered helmets and shields like shards of sun. Don't look for Nixon on the TV. Mom clicked him off. He shrunk to a cold white dot. The shoebox of ribbons, my honorable mentions, lost in the move. I was almost lost, too, circled by cowrie shells on the yellow bedspread, the gleam of them flaming the room into a sun-scorched shore in Borneo. Oh, it was only stuff to grow up on. But the ghost won't go. The rock was an accidental altar, the book an offering, the shells ceremonial. A fumbly kind of ritual and dignity were in them, something unwittingly sacred. Sacred the days, sacred the place because of the days, thus worthy of wonder the sloppily varnished bookshelf I notched and glued in woodshop, worthy the scissors and pens in the Slurpee cup, worthy the Turtles records.
That was the poet Chris Forehand reading one of his poems, Accidental Altar. Where did that poem begin?
Well, the first line is don't look for the Incas. Second line is in my fifth grade history book. So it started with Incas in a fifth grade history book. And Incas is just, we talk about words. That's a cool word. Who mm-hmm. wouldn't want to put Incas in a poem? Mm-hmm. So that was just hanging around for a while. And as I recall, I think I just had Incas in my fifth grade history book as a phrase. And then somehow or another, I latched onto don't look for this, don't look for that. So I put those two things together. Don't look for the Incas in my fifth grade history book. And I'm thinking of Rachel's poem, which I think is about a sense of awe, too, mm-hmm. And terror. And mm-hmm. these kind of elemental experiences that you can get to through incantation. Her poem, Mother May I, Mother May I, that's a kind of like an open sesame thing that gets you to this mysterious place. And so once I had don't look as my little, verbal gesture, I just said that a few times in the poem, and that got me down into this experience of all of these childhood details, which, and they're goofy. Like, remember, do they still have Slurpees? I don't know. But I did, in fact, in my childhood have a Slurpee cup. This drink you got from 7-Eleven, we used to drink those all the time. And, it's a plastic cup, and I put my scissors and pens in there. And I did have Turtles records. And I think, now I've got a Slurpee cup and Turtles records. So they're the Turtles, happy together Turtles, not real Turtles mm-hmm. that you find in nature. It's a Slurpee cup. It's not, the chalice in the mass. And so I can tell what I'm doing here, and I didn't expect to do it, but as I dug down into these mundane childhood details, I found little details that somehow are magical replacements in my own life for the symbols and objects that other people might find powerful.
When do you know that a poem is done? Mm-hmm. That's a tricky, like Whitman revised his work literally right up to his deathbed. When When do you know it's done? Callista, you made the mistake of making eye contact, so I'll go to you.
I think this is a wonderful question and one that I'm constantly considering as a poet. The poet Marianne Moore revised her work frequently. She published the poem Poetry half a dozen times over the course of her life, and it went from a two-page poem to a two-line poem by the end, so perhaps we're always condensing. I'm not sure that poems are ever done, except that they feel resolved but open in a way that I find satisfying, and that's the moment where I'm ready to start sharing.
Other than the five, we're getting close on time here, so I'm going to say to celebrate poetry, other than the five people who are in this room right now, the five poets, who is a poet that you think should have a larger audience or that people who are listening to this ought to discover? Chris?
I'm going to name two because I have to name my wife.
Okay.
Alessandra Lynch, who has a new book coming out in June. I'll also mention Laura Kaziski, who has gotten some attention. She won the National Book Critics Circle Award, but she's this magnificent musical lyric poet, K-A-S-I-S-C-H-K-E.
Rachel?
I hope I don't say her name wrong. Is it Jennifer Grotz?
Grotz, I think.
Grotz. She has some amazing books. And then...
we'll go to Kyle real quick.
I think Stephen Dunn I really like, or Patricia Smith.
Okay. Natalie?
Chris took mine. But
I've heard that answer in the class.
I've been reading a lot of... I don't know how you put it. Ko Eun. He's a Korean poet, very famous there. And I'm really into Diane Seuss right now.
I'll name another Hoosier poet, Ross Gay.
Oh, yes. Yeah, good.
Well, I think that is an appropriate last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Callista Buchan, Kyle D. Craig, Chris Forehan, Rachel Sahadachny, and Natalie Solmer for sharing their art with us and helping us celebrate National Poetry Month. Also would like to welcome our listeners, have them come back on Thursday when we will be back doing a live show. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.